boxing and classical music. You might not think those two disciplines go hand in hand, but actually they have a lot more in common when you take a minute to dig a little deeper. This episode's guest, Hannah Rankin, is the walking, talking example of that. The Scottish boxer earns her living as a professional bassoonist. She also happens to be quite good at punching people inside a ring. Since becoming a professional boxer in 2018, it's 6 victories in 9 bouts for Hannah, with a particular highlight being her victory that earned her the WBC silver super middleweight title. She also hit the headlines when she challenged American boxer Clarissa Shields for the IBF, WBA and WBC middleweight titles, a fight that was broadcast on Sky Sports. Despite many predicting the American would knock her out, Hannah went the full 10 rounds before losing on the points decision. In this interview, Hannah's infectious personality instantly comes across, but there are a wide range of talking points here. From life growing up on a sheep farm, to the challenges of music and being a woman in boxing, there is plenty to discuss. Hannah also talks about how boxing helped her through grief as she lost her mum to cancer very suddenly shortly after taking up the sport. But there's one standout driving force in her career. The 28-year-old is utterly determined to be Scotland's first world champion. And when we sat down for this interview back in February, she promised there would be a big announcement very soon. Sure enough, on March 11th, the news broke that Hannah would be fighting Sarah Curran in Paisley on June 15th for the IBO super welterweight title. For now though, why not kick back and listen to this amazing woman and her story in the sport that she adores. Welcome everyone to our latest feature interview on the podcast. Today I'm joined by a Scottish boxer with big aspirations. It's a very big welcome to the show to Hannah Rankin.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for coming on and taking the time out to have a sit down with us today. How is life at the moment?
Oh, it's, you know, thanks very much for having me on the show. Life is really busy at the moment. There's lots of things going on. Music and boxing, actually. My quintet's been quite busy recently, so I've been doing quite a lot of concerts with live music now, a new group that I'm working with, which works in care homes and in schools, so that's been keeping me busy. Boxing, just about to go back into camp, some exciting news coming soon, so watch this space. Can't say much more, but yeah, no, exciting times.
We always like it when people say watch this space. That means there's big plans coming. And yeah, personally, I'm obviously very looking forward to this chat, because we've obviously had boxers on before, but you're definitely the first classical musician we've had on before.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
We'll touch on all of that a bit more later, but I'll start off with the village of Luss in Scotland, which is where you're from, and also sheep farming.
Yeah.
So when people ask you about life growing up in Luss, how do you describe it to people? Because rural, I think, is probably the best summary we can get.
Rural is maybe an understatement. It is the middle of nowhere. I live at the top of Glen Luss, so on a sheep farm there. It's a hill farm, so it's quite remote. There's not a lot of people there. But it was an idyllic childhood, really, definitely. I wouldn't want for anything else, really. As a kid, if you've got all the space to roam in that you could ever possibly want and make as much noise as possible, I mean, what else could you ever need? But, you know, like I was saying to you earlier, being a teenager there wasn't so cool. You know, you couldn't just go hang out with your friends. You had to get a lift with your parents all the time, so that was stressful. But when you're an adult now, you look forward to going back, and I love to get back at Christmas, you know, from London, and from the hustle and bustle, it's really noisy here. So to go home and just have peace and quiet and still, it's really nice. Luss is a tiny village. Very popular in the summer. Lots of people come there, tourists. It's really, really beautiful. It's on the banks of Loch Lomond. It's one of the most beautiful places in Scotland. I went to school there, my primary school. It was tiny. There was 27 kids in the whole school. I was the only one in my year for like 4 years. So yeah, it was definitely like almost one-on-one. But yeah, no, it was a fantastic way to grow up. And me and my two sisters went there. So it was a real sort of family feel to primary school.
I can imagine. Growing up in that environment, is there anything you maybe took from it that you still use, was instilled in you back then that you still use today?
Yeah, and I mean, growing up on a farm, you're kind of it's a hard job, you know, you've got to work hard. And as every summer as a kid, like all the way through primary school, I was out working on the farm with my parents. You know, it's busy time of year, we're shearing sheep, lots of fleeces to be rolled, so I wasn't going on holiday in the summer, I was rolling fleeces and working with sheep. But yeah, it was great, and I think that sort of work ethic from my parents as well has been instilled in me, and I've carried it through to all of my jobs and right now into my boxing career as well. So yeah, I'm quite focused when it comes to things like that.
Well, that brings me perfectly on to the next question.
Yeah.
How big a role did your parents play?
I really admire my parents. They encouraged me and my two sisters to be really independent. They were very keen that we all decide, like, you know, we wanted to do what we wanted to do, and we weren't like, you know, encouraged to do one thing or not the other. I took part in combat sports as a kid. My mom let us do taekwondo, but then I was encouraged with my music as well. So yeah, no, it was great. And both my younger sisters have gone into farming actually, and I'm kind of here, excuse the joke, but I'm the black sheep of the family. I went into music now into boxing. So yeah, they've been a really important part in my upbringing, and yeah, I can't thank them enough, really.
So we'll turn on to music then, since you've touched on it now. Where does that love of music come from?
I was always... My granddad is a music teacher, and my mum and her two sisters, they all played musical instruments, and my mum encouraged us from a really young age. She was great. She played the piano, the cello and the French horn. And there was always music in my house from when I was a kid. We used to sing a lot at Christmas, and I played the flute at the time, and my sisters played the violin, the cello. So we all used to play together. It was really nice. And yeah, I kind of, that's where my love of it comes from. And my mum encouraged me a lot when I got older, and really supported me when I went to music college. So yeah, no, it's really from my mum really that it comes from.
Yeah, what does music give you then? Because I imagine there's obviously the joy side of it, but maybe the discipline side of it as well, when you've got to learn an instrument in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, so what people don't realise is that when you go to like conservatoire to study, you know, you're looking at minimum four hours personal practice a day, so you spend a lot of time with yourself in a practice room to get to, like, you know, the top levels of where you want to be and to really perform to the best of your ability. So it's really helped develop my discipline for sure. So it does drive my coach a little bit mad. He's like, has to kick me out the gym because I'm always in there working on things, and I find it hard to just switch off for a little bit. But you know, he said he'd rather have somebody that was desperate to learn and always working on things than not. So that's a good thing.
Exactly. And I mean, you certainly had the talent. You mentioned the conservatoire there and also the Royal Academy of Music you trained at.
Yeah.
Down here in London.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic experience to study at the Conservatoire of Scotland, obviously my home city in Glasgow. It's a great city, and it's a great place to be a student actually. So yeah, and I had a great 4 years there, and then I decided to move to London to do my master's at the Royal Academy of Music, and I've stayed here ever since. There's a lot of like great ensembles to work with in London, and fantastic other musicians to work with, so the sort of like the availability of work is more than it is at home in Scotland, and I love it down here in London. So yeah,
right, because that is essentially your work. You're sort of a musician for hire for orchestras,
yeah,
and other ensembles.
So I freelance. So if any orchestra needs a bassoon or a contrabassoon, and they're performer, they haven't got a performer for it, they'll phone, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm free, or no, I'm not free, sort of thing. I perform with my wind quintet, the Coriolis Quintet. We do concerts in and around London. Sometimes with schools and care homes, and other times for like lunchtime concerts and things. But yeah, I do that, and I also teach music to kids as well. So it keeps me busy. It's my main sort of job when I'm not
certainly
boxing.
Certainly keeps you busy.
Yeah.
Why the bassoon over any other instrument?
So I started on the flute when I was younger, and I had just done my grade 7. I was going to do my grade 8, and an old lady donated a bassoon to my school at the time, and I saw it come into the school, and I thought, that's cool, what's that? You know, and a lot of people play the flute, it's very popular. And I'm definitely one to always go down the different route, so I was like, I want to play that. And I fell in love with it, and it was just the perfect instrument for me. So it was a couple of years later, and I was off to conservatoire to do it, so it was a definite click for me. also it's really low and plays the bass lines, and yeah, that appealed to me. It was cool.
It's another example of you being the black sheep again.
Yeah, just be a bit odd. Yeah.
So then in terms of performances and things like that, what is it about them that just gives you that real buzz? Because I imagine it's a real adrenaline.
Yeah, I think this is something that, like, I've carried over into my boxing world as well. For like, so for me, performing is quite a big part of my life, you know, and there is definitely an excitement and adrenaline performing as a big ensemble, like an orchestra, for example. You know, you can be on stage and you can be anywhere in the world, and I've performed in some amazing places, I've performed with some amazing people and orchestras, and it's that sort of buzz that, like, all 120 of you are totally nailing it at the same time, and you're creating this amazing music, and you can hear a pin drop in the audience, and yeah, it's so exciting, and you kind of push the limits of, like, the speeds and how quiet it's going to go, and you really create, like, a sort of a magical experience for people. And when you finish, you're totally on a high, you know, when you finish a concert like that, the whole orchestra is on a high, and that sort of buzz is the same sort of feeling I get when I'm performing in the ring on fight night, you know, and when you get a win and you've just, yeah, it's great. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where we tie it over into the boxing, considering we're a sports podcast and all.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you the type of person that thrives off that buzz?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously it's that sort of, you're looking for that sort of out of body thing, you know, you're looking for that moment when you're quicker, you're faster, you're just beating them to the punch, and you're setting things up, and everything's starting to flow, and when you get into that sort of flow, it's an amazing feeling, and I thrive off that, obviously, and the adrenaline of, like, fighting in front of a big crowd, it's so exciting.
So, to boxing, you obviously mentioned you started combat sports in the taekwondo ranks, if you like. How does your first taste of boxing come about?
So I did taekwondo when I was younger. I used to compete with my sister. I loved it. I actually stopped it because I was going into music. And my mum was like, I think it's probably not so wise to be getting kicked and playing the flute at the time. But then I was studying at the conservatoire in Glasgow. I just desperately wanted to do something for fitness. And it's probably terrible to say, but I just don't like normal gym. I do find it very boring. So I went and found it was a circuit class with Muay Thai up at the Grip House, and so it was for Fight Camp, and you did a couple of days doing Thai boxing and then a couple of days doing circuit training, so it was the right kind of thing. It kept me really entertained, and I've always loved combat sports, so it was great. And then when I moved to London, I continued doing Thai. Then I met my coach Noel Callan and Derek Williams, Sweet D Williams, and they got me into boxing, and I fell in love with it. So since then, I've just been sticking with it.
When you tell people, obviously you've got the classical music side, but there's the boxing side as well. Do they ever just look at you and think, how on earth do those two go hand in hand?
Yeah, I get the whole real confused faces a lot.
Because I imagine there's a lot more similarities than people first realise.
Like we were talking about performing, it is all about performing. And at the end of the day, if you like to perform, then these two things go very well together. It is very disciplined. You've got to really work on your focus and practice a lot. So these two things go really well together. And it just so happens I enjoy playing an instrument and punching other people. So they go well together.
Yeah, exactly. Being a woman in a sport that I suppose you would always traditionally categorise as the male-dominated sport, was that ever an issue for you growing up, or you were instantly accepted?
So for me, like as I said, my mum and dad encouraged me to do whatever I wanted to do. So it was never a question of, you can't do taekwondo because you're a girl, or you can't do like combat sports because of that. And when I decided I want, because I was doing white collar boxing, that's how I kind of got into it. So I was doing boxing for fitness, and then I did some white collar fights, and then I wanted to take it to the next level. And the options were go down the amateur route or go down the professional route, and I wanted to stay with my coach, and so I went down the professional route. But my dad and my fiance have always been so supportive, and it's really important to have their support. And my coach at the time said, you know, you've got to ask your dad. I'm not being sexist or anything, but your dad and Mike are the people who are going to be, they're ones watching you in the ring, and whether you need their support, and because boxing is a hard sport if you don't have the support of the people around you. And they've always been like really encouraging and said to me, you know, obviously, Hannah, you're going to do what you want to do and we're going to support you in it, whatever happens. So, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Not had any problems with that. I mean, general public-wise, I definitely had some interesting responses from other musicians. Some of them were really like, that's amazing, you know, it's great. We can totally see the link in with music as well. It's so focused, and to be at an elite level in music or sport is similar sort of mind stuff for them, you know. Whereas some people were like, oh, you shouldn't do that. You're going to damage your fingers. You're going to hurt yourself. It could affect your music career. And then the general, oh, women shouldn't be boxing. It's not for women, which is very tedious and boring. We live in the 21st century, so.
Well, but then that I quite like that reaction then,
yeah.
Because it's almost like, you know, we've passed that stage.
Yeah. I'm not going to entertain people who sit there and say that women shouldn't be boxing when there's so many of us out there like showing that women are just as technically as good and just as exciting to watch. I mean, you can't stand there and tell me you don't want to watch Katie Taylor box. She's insane, you know, and she's someone that I look up to. Cecilia Brackhouse, you know, these are people who are out there like striving to showcase female boxing and really help bring it up. And if you're not interested in that, then I don't see why you'd just be interested in male boxing, because we're all just as good, you know, so we work just as hard.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to touch on that maybe love of boxing as well, and that the power of sport aspect, because I know that, I think I read shortly after you started the whole boxing journey, your mom obviously fell ill,
yeah,
with cancer, and then passed away,
yeah,
relatively quickly after that.
Yeah.
And you've spoken before in the past about how boxing essentially helped you deal with that,
yeah,
cope with that. I mean, what was that like to be around, but also how's the sport and having something to focus on helped you through it?
So, actually, when my mum was sick, it was really quick. She passed away 6 months after the diagnosis, so it was extremely quick, and it was rather a shock to the whole family. We were not expecting anything like that to have happened, and she just got diagnosed, and 6 months later she passed away, and it was a horrible time. But during that time, she didn't want me to come away from my studies, and my dad had said to me, you know, like go to the gym, kind of like do some fitness, it'll help you clear your head, you know, it's hard to deal with things like this, but like, you know, if you go to the gym, and you know, it might help. And I got into my boxing, and I really focused on that. It was the one thing that I could work so hard at that by the end of it I was so tired I couldn't think of anything else. And that was that brief moment of time during that horrible time where I wasn't really miserable.
That's the escapism side,
yeah,
of it,
that
it?
Side of it, and also just having people around me teaching me new things, keeping me constantly active. So I would say like through the time when she was sick, and then also through the grieving period, boxing was definitely something that helped me to have a focus and to help me get through that. And I definitely think it was a major part in me helping to being able to grieve properly and also, yeah, get through it.
Yeah, and mend your mind, I suppose.
Yeah.
Does that experience maybe form that closer link with you and the sport?
I think so. Like, I've never really thought about it like that, but I think you're probably right. It's something that I know my mum would 100% back me in this. She was always a little bit crazy anyway, and she's like, she would expect me to be doing something crazy. All of her daughters, you know. But I think she'd be so proud to see all the stuff that I'm achieving in it. And also just, I think, yeah, the fact that it helped me so much to get through a really hard time in my life. Yeah, I think I'm quite attached to it because of that. And it's something I can always turn to just to like switch off, you know, go and work on the bag and clear my head.
It must be a real motivating factor.
It definitely is, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, turning pro, what's the difference? And I suppose what are the main challenges that you faced making that step up to turning pro? Because I think it was 2018 was your first year,
yeah,
of being a pro.
Yeah, exactly. So wanting to go professional, because I hadn't gone down the amateur route, I hadn't got any amateur accolades, I hadn't trained for very long as a boxer, and I'd done it from the white collar thing. There was the initial sort of concern that I wouldn't have enough experience. So when I went for my license with the board, I would, like, you know, I had to show who I'd been sparring with in the lead up to that. So, I mean, my coach isn't daft, and I had quite a lot of experience before that. So I've been training with Kelly Morgan, who at the time was a WBC silver middleweight champion. I've been training with Michaela Lauren, who's now six times world champion. So yeah, I've been in with some top people, and I've been experiencing quite a lot of things. And I feel that definitely helped me to get my license. And also, you know, you have to do an assessment. They come and watch you box. And they were like, oh, there's no question. You can have a license, sort of thing. So I think that really drove me to work super hard. And I'm definitely someone who, if you're going to do something, I want to put 150,000,000% into it. So, yeah, no, that was a whole experience in itself doing that. I was so nervous as well. I was so nervous for the interview. I was nervous for... I think I was at the same time as Josh Kelly when he got his license. Okay. As well. Yeah, a lot of us were in the same room together, and I could definitely tell we felt like we were getting grilled. You know, it was like one of those awful exam days at school. But no, it was really good. And yeah, no, I think that's been an interesting part of it, turning over, and then getting the fights together. You know, so my debut took forever to organize, because like there were so many dropouts and things that just weren't coming together. And actually in the end I ended up fighting the European number 7 on my debut, because I was so fed up with having had so many dropouts of opponents and dates having to be changed. And she'd said yes, and I was like, I'll take it, I don't really care. I'll take it, I don't care who it is. And that could have been a bit foolhardy, but as Noel says, you know, either I was gonna do it or I wasn't going to do it, and it was a pretty much a good indicator of what I was going to be like from then on. I've never had a really easy fight, shall we say. So yeah, no, I've always been learning on the job, and that's how I kind of always put it.
When that debut comes around, yeah, how do you handle that first date?
Oh, there's so many things. I was so nervous, I was so excited, but it was just, it was a really exciting day, actually. There's lots of stuff to go on. I've been kept pretty calm the whole time. Noel's very good at that. We have routines for, like, you know, how I relax beforehand and how I try and focus on what I need to achieve and things. And these have definitely been refined over the 2 years now I've been a pro. And I like to have routines and plans and things. So, you know, yeah, no. But by the time I got there, I was a jangling bunch of nerves. And it was great to have all my family and friends there and things. So, yeah, no, it was an exciting day.
I can imagine. And we had a brief chat before we started recording about the funding side of things.
Yes.
And how you've got to think of all these exterior factors, be yeah. it travel, be it accommodation and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how much of a challenge is it? Because it's not simply about getting your technique right or getting your mind right on the day.
So to actually fight on the day, there's a lot of things that have to be in place. Obviously you've had a really busy training camp, you've worked hard, you've got your sparring, maybe you've had to pay for sparring opponents, you have to get your diet right, your nutrition, and also like your supplements as well. That's all expensive things, and of course all your kit, and then when you fight you have all your fight gear as well, so that costs itself. But then before that even happens, before you even get to fight night, you have to pay for your opponent. You have to pay for your opponent's team, fly them over. Because I don't have a full-time promoter. So my team, we cover the cost of my opponent's purse, her and her team's flights and accommodation before to get here. And then obviously their food whilst they're here. Then on top of that, you usually pay on average £1,000 to the house to box on a show. So you have to pay that £1,000 before you can even box on that show. Then on top of that, you have to sell a certain number of tickets. If you don't sell a certain number of tickets, you can't fight. So once you've factored in all of these things, then you might potentially get to box. So I think these are things that people don't realize, and the cost. And if you're fighting for a belt, for example, you've got to pay sanctioning fees. You've got to pay for extra judges and officials. These people all have to be paid for. So there's a lot of hidden costs in boxing that people don't really know about and aren't really aware of. And I think they think, oh, that's nice, you're boxing. Maybe I can make it, maybe I can't. And you're sitting there thinking, please come. I really need you to buy tickets so I'm actually allowed to fight. And yeah, that's a whole side of it, which is quite stressful, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, when you list each single one, then it becomes infinitely longer than anyone imagined.
And I think as well, like what people don't realize is, it's more difficult for girls in some ways, because for us, we can't just phone up an opponent to come up from Portsmouth. I don't have that option. In the UK, there's not that many of us. as much. There's so many boys, whereas there's not many girls. So most of our opponents come from abroad. And so therefore, you've automatically got to pay the flights, whereas you can't just pay for a train ticket. You're paying for a flight. And you don't know where they're coming from. And then their team as well. So there's two or three of them coming. You know, and that's, let's say, three flights for your first flight from Hungary or something. That adds up, you know. So, yeah, that's a bit frustrating for us. But there are more girls getting into sport, thankfully, in the UK. So hopefully we're going to have a larger amount of us.
Exactly. And we always like to see positive change and more, more participation.
Since I turned pro, I think when I turned pro, there was 15 of us. So there's now like 27 or something like that. Something roughly around that. So that, I mean, that's a massive increase in 2 years.
Exactly. So it's always nice to see where it goes in the next 2 years and so on. Speaking of belts.
Oh, yes.
I'll turn on now to June 2018, where I'm going to, I've written it down so I say it right. You got, or you rather won, the WBC silver super middleweight title.
Middleweight title.
I did say that, didn't I? Yeah. Super middleweight title, yes.
Yeah, it was. I was meant to be fighting for the super welterweight title, but because my opponent fell through last minute, we had to get another opponent, and she could only fight at middle. So we ended up fighting for the WBC middleweight title, and that was one of the best nights ever. I had an amazing time.
I was going to say, is that maybe the night that's arguably cemented your status a little bit and maybe shot you into prominence?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was just such a great night. I was fighting for, it was 10 rounds for this WBC silver title. And I think everybody wants to have a green belt. The WBC, their belts are beautiful. And I mean, I would like to take any title, but the WBC one is obviously arguably a lot of people's favorites. I was fighting Sanna Turunen from Finland, 10 rounds. And it was a 10 round war. It was a great fight. I won every single round. And to win that title at home in Scotland was amazing. It was just one of the best nights ever.
You still have dreams about that.
Yeah, right? I do.
I mean, there's a cracking picture as well of you on the train wearing the belt.
Oh yeah, no. So the amazing thing was I got on, and one of the ticket collectors, big boxing fan, and he was so excited about it. They put us up to first class on the train back down to London. He was just like, "Oh, can I get a photo?" And yeah, we'll move you up to first class. And I was just so proud. It was great.
How often does that belt come out?
It comes out when people want to see it at talks and things like that, and I keep it at home. I have it, and I still got the hand wraps from the fight. So, it's one of my proudest moments, I think.
Oh, I rightly so as well. We're obviously here now in February 2019, and your record is 6 victories in 9 bouts.
Yes.
Hope I've got that right. Otherwise, that's embarrassing. Most recently, you earned a points victory over Eva Bajic. Again, I hope I'm saying that right. In Glasgow last month. It was about 3-4 weeks ago now. I imagined about before that one as well in November against IBF, WBA and WBC middleweight champion Clarissa Shields.
Yep.
Was maybe one of your most high profile bouts.
Yeah, so I decided to take a... So I'm definitely of the opinion that as a fighter, you should fight. And I think a lot of people are too scared to take big risks and opportunities out there. As far as I'm concerned, I want to become a world champion. So I was offered the opportunity to go and fight for the unified middleweight championship of the world against Clarissa Shields in America. And I was like, I'm taking the fight. So many people had turned her down. So many people said that they didn't want to fight her. And I just think it's ridiculous, you know. Also, I'm one of the main training partners of Christina Hamer. Christina was meant to be fighting her for that fight, but she was sick. So I was like, I'll take the fight, you know. And it's been a fantastic, it was a fantastic experience for me. It's raised my profile massively in the sport. The general consensus was everyone thought I was going to get knocked out, and everyone but me and my team. And even Shields predicted she was going to knock me out in 4 rounds. I knew it wasn't going to happen.
It took the full 10 rounds.
Yeah, it went the full 10 rounds, and I lost in a points decision. And I'm proud of my performance, and fighting at a weight class above where I normally fight anyway. And for me, it was just a fantastic experience. If she comes down to super welter, I would love that fight again. It's definitely something that I think we put on a great show for people. It was a great build up, and that's definitely something that we could do again if she comes down to my weight. So
exactly. I mean, obviously taking part in all of that and having
that
your
huge.
Yeah, and it being so big. Yeah. I mean, what did you take away from it? Maybe from the publicity side of things, but also the fight itself.
So for it was the first time I'd ever been on TV. It was shown on Sky Sports. It was on a Matchroom show, Matchroom USA with DAZN. We did lots of pre-fight filming with DAZN. They did a little bit of my record a bit of my story, and that was an amazing thing. And I had to go fly out to New York for a press conference. I mean, it's kind of the stuff that you only really dream about, and it was happening to me, and I can't believe that it did happen. You know, because but on the other hand, I've worked so hard to get into that position that it felt like all that hard work was really paying off. Carissa is, as you'll probably know, she's a two-weight world champion. She's won two Olympic golds in boxing. So, yeah, it was a great experience for me to go up against someone like that. But I showed that actually I belong up at that level. And that's what I've taken away from it, really. Like, I just wasn't quite experienced enough, you know, on the night. But it being my 7th fight ever, I think, or 8th fight, something like that, I think I did all right. To be perfectly honest, it was my 8th fight professionally and 12th fight ever if you include my 4 white collar fights.
Is there anything then that you put into place or put into action last month in your fight that you maybe didn't put into action then?
Oh yeah, so everything I learned from that fight with Carissa, you know, I've taken away, and me and my coach are not people to kind of sit around, you know, so we're always working on new stuff, constantly building on things. And so we took stuff that we took from that fight, we worked on, and we put it into practice in the next fight against Eva. So yeah, I can really see a real development in myself, and I'm looking forward to getting in there again to show the next step up and the things that we've been working on from the last fight. So yeah, constant improvement is the goal.
Now, and speaking of the next step up,
yep.
2019, the goal, as you said, is obviously to become Scotland's first ever female professional world boxing champion. And how do you go about doing that? Because you've obviously set up a fundraising page.
Yep.
But then you obviously mentioned the big announcements, but then it's actually organising those fights for you
So fighting for world titles, there's a lot more things that people don't really realise. You know, you've got to be in the right position to be fighting for it. I'm currently ranked 4 in the world by the WBC, the WBA and the IBF. WBO don't put out rankings. So yeah, I mean, that's an amazing achievement in itself. I'm really proud of that. But, you know, you have to work to get these opportunities offered to you. You have to take fights, you have to take risks, and us as a team, that's what we do. So, you know, we've got some things in the pipeline, but the ultimate goal is to become world champion this year, and I definitely see that happening. And there are things in motion, hopefully, that are going to come off towards that, but I can't say much else.
But then we'll turn to the fundraising page, and obviously is the fundraising aspect. And people, again, we talked about it before we started recording, is people buying into you as a person rather than maybe a sport. And we mentioned it's this very British thing about how we're a little bit reserved.
Oh, yeah. We're terrible.
And we don't go out there and actually ask people for help when we need help.
We don't know. In the UK especially, we're terrible for asking anybody to help us. Like, we'd rather suffer and be miserable than ask someone to help us out. And when I was in America, I learned a little bit about setting up a crowdfunding page. And I think that this is something that I thought, you know what, it can't hurt to try. And, I suppose I swallowed a little bit of my own pride and said, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to give it a go. And I've put it up and I've had a great response so far. And I think it's a place, so it's on Sponsor Me. So that's the website. And if you go, like, for people who can't come to your fights but who support you as a fighter or might want to just give you a little bit of help because they know you personally but they can't be there and they can't actually buy a ticket or whatever, their way of supporting you is maybe to put some money into your crowdfunding page, and then they feel like they're helping you without feeling like they've had to come up to you and be like, would you like some money? Because that was always really awkward especially in the UK. So it's that sort of platform where people can learn about me, learn about my journey and my goals for 2019, which is to become world champion. And when you go on the page, there's updates of what I've been doing, charities that I'm working with as a new ambassador, which is exciting, and also my recent fights and things about me that you can learn. So it's a kind of a way of getting a little bit of your profile out and also giving people that opportunity or that platform to support you financially in your goals, to help pay for all the costs of training and traveling and sparring partners and nutritional things and everything like this.
Exactly, and we look forward to seeing how that goes on this year. One thing I wanted to touch on as well, which I hadn't written down or planned for, but we were talking about it before, is the whole boxing being 50% sport and 50% entertainment. And obviously, even if I refer to just the two previous boxers we've had on this podcast, in Stacey Copeland and Siobhan Clarke, two big personalities.
Yeah.
How natural is being a big personality to you? Was it something you maybe had to learn? That entertainment side of it?
If you know me, you would know I'm a real chatterbox, and I'm very hurt. Like, I just don't shut up.
I've learned that in the last half hour.
Yeah, no. I'm very sociable and I like people, but I'm normally not the kind of person who wants to be the center of attention. I have to be like in the performing zone to be wanting to do that. I definitely think that boxing is one of those things where the 50%, which is in the entertainment zone, is something that as a fighter you have to develop as well. My sort of top advice to anybody who wants to get into boxing is to get a little bit of experience, like on a platform where you have to speak or do some public speaking, or you know, put yourself out there, because when the time comes and you have to step up. For me, one of the biggest ones was for the press conference in New York. I had to stand up there, all the cameras are on me, and I have to do a little bit of a speech and talk about my upcoming fight and speak to Clarissa, who's sitting like four chairs down, and you know, you're all the cameras are there and everyone's recording you, and it's you've got to be confident, and you've got to show what you're going to do and how confident you are in your abilities. And if you get up there and you're really nervous and you can't do that, then it doesn't really bode well for your fight that's coming up. So yeah, I think that's something that boxing, people don't really associate with boxing, but it's actually quite a big part of it,
I suppose, being the center of attention.
Yeah.
And have you warmed into that role? Do you maybe put on this character, this different persona now when the time comes?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, for me, by the time you've got to the fight week, you're so in the zone anyway, and you've worked, I couldn't have worked any harder, and I always work super hard in my training so that when I get to fight week, I have the confidence of knowing I couldn't have worked harder. But yeah, it is a persona, you know, you're showing your most confident side. That's the side that you won't not necessarily show when you're just walking down the street or when you're with your family or something, but on fight night and on fight week, you're showing off your kind of most confident side, and the side that you, yeah, it's kind of show off the best of yourself, really. And that's the thing that I've had to really work on, because yeah, 4 years ago, if you put me in the limelight and told me to speak to people, or it's kind of what I'd think of as showing off, it's not something that I'd actually naturally want to do, and I'm naturally quite shy. So yeah, it's something I've had to really work on.
Again, it's that British thing, isn't it? That
100%.
Naturally modest thing, yeah.
Try and be modest.
Oh yeah, 1,000 times over. To finish off, I'll have a couple of sort of wider, bigger questions, if you like.
Yeah.
Obviously, being a woman in the sport you're in, how important is it that women's sport in general, I suppose, is maybe becoming more accessible, be it from a participation standpoint or maybe from a viewpoint standpoint? Because you mentioned someone like Katie Taylor and what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself having a role to play a little bit like that?
Oh, definitely.
And opening it up to others.
Definitely. As a woman in sport, it's really important that you're showcasing your sport and sport in general as accessible to other girls who are growing up and who want to get involved, and maybe to the ones that don't necessarily want to get involved. I've recently just become an ambassador for the Active Communities Network. It's a fantastic charity that's getting young people into sport and also getting them to volunteer and teach other young people things. It's amazing, and there's been a real good intake of girls getting involved, and I'm really keen to be part of that, you know, because I remember when I was at school, I was always desperate for PE. I couldn't wait to get into do PE, whereas the rest of the girls in my class were not interested. It wasn't cool to be into sport, you know, whereas nowadays I'm hoping that sort of attitude can be changed and that I can be, like, you know, an important part of that, because sport is so great for so many things. It's good for your health and well-being. It's also great to, like, discover new skills about yourself, like working in a team, you know, if you're in a team and you're playing football or you're playing hockey or something, or being independent and being disciplined. These are all things that, like, as human beings, the stuff that we really need to work on, and that can really help us in general life, and to do it with something fun like sport is in my view, a great thing to do. Also, it can really help confidence. I think if you're naturally quite a shy person, to get involved in a sport and learn something and work with other girls maybe, or even like a mixed group of people, can help you, yeah, really grow your own confidence. So yeah, there's so many positives that come of it, and yeah, hopefully you get more people involved as much as possible.
Exactly, and that is a message we can certainly get behind.
Yeah.
Obviously we're biased being a sports podcast, but I mean, we bang on about it, and we have banged on about it in several episodes in the past, just what sport can do for you, and you're arguably a prime example of that as well.
Actually, a funny, when I went to study my master's at the Royal Academy of Music, one of the head sort of tutors was giving a speech, and he was saying to us that one of the things that stuck with me that he said was, I don't want to see you in a practice room all day, every day. I want to see you going out for a walk in the park. Go and find a sport that you like, that you play for an hour every day or every other day. Do something active, because you'd be amazed at the improvement in your playing when you've been out for an hour, cleared your head, and come back. Sometimes staying in a practice room for, you know, 4 hours is actually a negative towards what you trying to develop your creative side, or just trying to get better, because you're not actually allowing your head space to think. So get involved in a sport and get active, and that stuck with me, and it definitely helped me when I was studying. So if it can help me when I'm studying at uni, it can definitely help kids who are in primary school and secondary school who are sitting in maths thinking, I don't love maths, but they've got to come, then they've got sport afterwards, you know, it might help them to be more creative and get involved.
Yeah, perfectly said. And with that, I think that's probably the perfect way to round off this interview. Yeah. Thank you again so much for coming down and sharing your story on the podcast. Obviously, a lot of themes and a lot of things we touched upon.
Yeah,
but
thank you very much for having
me. Personally, I really enjoyed it, and there's a lot of positive messages there. And when those announcements do come out, we look forward to seeing what happens afterwards.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'll let you guys know as soon as I know. Obviously, I think most people know as soon as we put it out, but I'll keep you all in touch. And thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Hannah for taking the time out to sit down with me and record that interview. I certainly enjoyed conducting it, and we hope everyone out there enjoyed the episode. So here is to that big fight on June the 15th. Also, lots of thanks to Will for holding the fort, hosting the podcast in my absence while I was away on my holidays, as we've had some top quality special episodes recently. As always, listeners, if you enjoy what we do, please spread the word. Give us a rating on Apple Podcasts and get involved on social media. We are on Instagram, Twitter, and on Facebook, and all of our handles are SportsspielPod. You can also email us whatever is on your mind to our email address, sportsspielpod@gmail.com. That's it from me on this special episode, and we will next be returning on March the 31st for what should be a full-length episode, the first we've done for quite a while now. As ever, listeners, thank you so much for tuning into the podcast, and we will see you very soon.